And tonight's talk is the second part in the three-part series. So if you didn't hear the first part, those of you who were here last week, recall that I forgot to turn on the tape recorder. But I did give a similar talk in Redwood City on Sunday, and they did record it. And I'll probably give that talk on my Monday night group next Monday. So you can come to Ben Lomond on Monday, and I'm going to try to record it there. So either we'll get the recording from Redwood City or I'll record it. So the title of this talk is Nowhere to Go, the Non-Abiding of the Here and Now. Nowhere to Go, the Non-Abiding of the Here and Now. And as I said last week, I'm basing these three talks on what I'm calling a pith instruction. And a pith instruction means a short phrase or just a short sentence. It's also called the pith teaching. And all three of these talks are really pointing at or talking about the same thing, but just from slightly different angles. And so the pith instruction is nothing to do, nowhere to go, and no one to be. So last week I talked about nothing to do. I'm going to say this again, and I just want you to pay attention to what your response is when I say this. Nothing to do, nowhere to go, no one to be. Nothing to do, nowhere to go, and no one to be. And just notice what your response was. Maybe you felt some openness or ease with that. Maybe a little letting go. Maybe you felt some confusion, had some thinking. Maybe those kind of statements, those Zen-like statements, are irritating to you. Maybe you had curiosity. There's no right or wrong to this. I think it's just useful to notice what comes up when you hear things like this. So, in talking about nowhere, the teaching of nowhere to go, also as I did with nothing to do, I'm going to talk about it from a couple different standpoints, a couple different levels. And it's really all three of these talks are what I would call more advanced teachings. And there are many different levels of teachings in Buddhism, many different kinds. There's teachings which are more what I would call relative world teachings, teachings about sila, the precepts about patience, honesty, loving kindness, determination, and even mindfulness. Things that are part of how we practice in our conventional world here. And then there are teachings that are pointing to something else. Pointing to something else beyond our conventional world and beyond our conventional way of thinking and beyond our conventional understanding. They're pointing to a bigger view. They're pointing to the view, I would say, the view that liberates. And some of this may be a bit hard to grasp and you might kind of spin around with it in your thinking mind for a while. Or it might make some kind of deep intuitive sense to you. And again, either way is fine. Different times we respond to different teachings in different ways. So when we go, you know, again, this is nowhere to go. So when we go, when we're going in some way, when we talk about going from here to there or whatever, we're traveling in time and in space and location in the conventional world. We're traveling in time and in space and location. And time, so I'm going to talk about nowhere to go in terms of time, meaning the now, and terms of space and location as meaning here. And I'm going to do a little bit of deconstructing time and location. And this is a very ancient tradition, and is found actually in the tradition of Ajahn Chah and Ajahn Sumedho and Ajahn Amaro. And I'm actually going to be reading at the end a little bit about this idea of going beyond time and location in the conventional sense. And I give you the question, where do we actually go? Where do we actually go to find peace and freedom and wisdom and a free heart? Where do you have to go to find that? Where do you try to go? Where do you think you should go? So in reflecting about time, if you notice your mind, a lot of the time, your mind may be preparing for the future, rehearsing for the future, getting ready to do something in the future, getting ready to finish something in the future, getting ready to become something in the future, or worrying about what might happen in the future. For most of you, this is not news. If you've been practicing at all, are on a spiritual path. And then the other part, of course, what our mind seems to be engaged in is remembering the past through interpretation, through assumptions, through our ideas, through our conclusions, through our images of ourself and others, through what we believe the world to be, through the stories we tell ourselves, through the beliefs we have. And for most people, these two movements pretty much are the main activity of the mind, that they preoccupy the mind from birth, not from birth, maybe from 6 or 7 years old to death. And the extent of the understanding of the world and themselves is caught up in the future and past thinking. And this kind of, even though we may have some insight about that, this kind of movement, this kind of preoccupation with past and future is very persistent. And we bring it into our practice. And we think of practice in times of future or past, what I did do, what I will do, and kind of a future that someday I will get it. If I'm lucky, I'll get it someday, whatever it is. And so in the future, we'll have something we don't have now. We'll be something we aren't now. Perhaps we'll know something we don't know now. And there's, you know, some element of truth to that. But I'm basically going to challenge that view in saying that all those ideas also come from another persistent view in our culture is that we're deficient and that we're lacking things and that we have to strive and work hard to fill that deficiency, to complete ourselves. And from this point of view, there is nothing missing. And there never has been anything missing. And there's nothing in the future to be found because the future does not exist. So the first place we need to get to for going somewhere, the first place we need to get to, which of course is not really a going anywhere, is to the here and now. So your first task in your practice is to arrive fully in the here and now. And you might say your second task is to rest here, to find stability in the here and now. And part of what that means is clearing up the confusion about what I call the confusion of the delusion of non-presence. The delusion of non-presence. Because are we ever anywhere else? Ever. If some of you have time traveled in some kind of machine, let me know. But no, as far as I know, and as far as all the sages know, no one has ever been anywhere but in the here and now. There has never been anything else but the here and now. Nowness has always been, and nowness is what is. So it's not really a matter of becoming present and not being present, becoming present, although we use that language and I use that language myself. It's really about clearing up the confusion that it's even possible to not be present, to clear up the confusion that comes from getting lost in our frontal lobe, where our complex thinking goes on, getting lost in the creations of our own mind. The creations of our own mind are only happening in the present. And the more clear you get, the more resting in presence you are, the more obvious that is, and the less confused you are. So this whole idea of the passage of time is an illusion. It's, you know, there is a conventional experience of it. I'm not denying that. But really what the passage, what we call the feeling of the passage of time, is just a feeling in the present. And it's the noticing, I would say, describe it as the noticing and remembering of the changing phenomena in the present. So we have presence that is unchanging, and we have phenomena that is arising and disappearing, and changing form, the sun rises and the sun sets, gets light and dark. Our posture, the sense of our posture is changing. There's all kinds of things. We have the, what I'll get to, the illusion of movement. That all that has the conventional interpretation, we learn to understand that as the passage of time. And we need to live in the conventional world. It's not a bad thing. But from the standpoint of awareness, there is no time. And you've probably all heard about timelessness and talked about in different ways in the spiritual path. From the point of awareness, there's no time. And the more that awareness becomes your home, the more that there is, and very clearly you know, that there's just this. There's just this now. 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 And now. This is from Ajahn Amaro. Ajahn Amaro is the abbot of Abigiri Monastery in near Mendocino, one of the lineage holders of the Ajahn Chah Thai Forest tradition. We use such phrases as "this moment," but they are not quite accurate because they can still give us an impression of the present as a small fragment of time. For even though it is just a moment, the present is limitless. In letting go of the structures of past and future, we realize that this present is an infinite ocean. And the result of this realization is living in the eternal, in the timeless. There are no fragments of time, there are no pieces. There is just this open, endless, boundless ocean of now. So this is Pema Chodron. I'm saying something before Pema Chodron. Since there is only now, there is only one place, isn't quite the right word, there is only now to awaken. There is no future to awaken in. And this is Pema Chodron. We already have everything we need. There is no need for self-improvement. We already have everything we need. All these trips that we lay on ourselves, they are like clouds that temporarily block the sun. But all the time our warmth and brilliance are right here. This is who we really are. We are one blink of an eye away from being fully awake. We are one blink of an eye away from being fully awake. And I might say that it's even less than a blink of the eye. So, again, in our daily life, in our conventional life, we often seems like we feel like we're going someplace. We're coming here, we're going home, we're moving around our house, we always think we're going someplace, but are we? And when I say we're going somewhere, I mean both literally, as I just said, but also metaphorically. If we think of it we're progressing. If we think it spiritually, we're getting someplace spiritually, we hope anyway. And we're getting ahead spiritually in some way, we hope. And, well, there's some, in the conventional sense, some truth to that, that underneath it can be this basic mistake. This mistake that awakening and freedom are elsewhere. They're elsewhere in time, they're elsewhere in place. John Kabat-Zinn wrote a book many of you know called Wherever You Go, There You Are. But I think, and a number of people said this, the more accurate title would be Wherever You Go, Here You Are. Because just like in time there's only now, in location there's only here. And if there's only here and now, what's the point of going anywhere else? Can you go anywhere else? This is from Dogen Zenji, the great Zen master of, around the 12th century. If you cannot find the truth right where you are, where else do you expect to find it? So this is a plea in the same way to see the truth here and now. Don't be waiting for some time, elder time, in some other place. So like time, when we look at here and location from the standpoint of our true nature, from the place of awareness, from resting in awareness, which is our true nature, what we'll see is that there is changing sensations, the visual field changes. If you get up and walk across the room, you'll say you have gone somewhere from one side of the room to the other side. From a conventional sense, you've gone from here to there. But from, again, the viewpoint, from the experience of consciousness and awareness, what has happened is that there's just been, again, these variety of sensations. And we've learned to interpret them to mean that we have moved, that we have gone through from here to there. We feel the visual field changes in a way that we've learned to interpret as we've moved. Our body feels a certain way when we walk. We have the sounds change, and so we interpret that to say we have moved in location. And again, it's important to be able to interpret things that way, or it will be a lot of trouble. To be able to know the conventional sense of here to there. But again, from awareness, things have arisen and disappeared, have changed in here, here and now. So if you think of here as a location, like here for me right now, sitting on the Zafu and Zabutan, in this room in Santa Cruz, in California, in the United States, on the planet Earth, that's not really what here is. That's all convention, and that's all ideas and names. The Buddha said, do not pursue the past. Do not lose yourself in the future. The past no longer is. The future has yet to come. Looking deeply at life as it is, in the very here and now, the practitioner dwells in stability and freedom. Once you give up past and future, there is stability and freedom. Once you give up here and there, there is stability and freedom. And this is again from Dogen Zenji. But do not ask me where I am going as I travel in this limitless world where every step I take is my home. But do not ask me where I am going as I travel in this limitless world where every step I take is my home. So, again, we move from the illusion, or not the illusion, the preoccupation of doing something, doing things, the preoccupation from going somewhere and getting somewhere, the preoccupation from getting things, from being somebody, and the preoccupation of even seeking on the spiritual path to one of being. And I talked about this last week. Now I'm going to repeat it again, to this being here and now. And it's the shift from doing and going to what I call a dynamic, sublime receptivity. In this dynamic, open, sublime receptivity, there is this quality of openness, of space, of clarity, of what I call vivid attentiveness. And as we come to rest in the here and now, and we allow that dynamic, sublime receptivity, we are able to see the actual truth, see the actual wisdom of what is. Otherwise, we have filled ourselves up with activity and plans and preconceived ideas and reactions. This is the last stanza from a long poem by Rumi. I have used this once or twice before, and I like it very much because it does describe what happens the longer you commit yourself to this here and now and to waking up. Okay, this is Rumi. That is why, after a long, agonizing life as a hunter, you might say as a seeker, that is why, after a long, agonizing life as a hunter, I finally let go and got hunted down and became free. I finally let go and got hunted down and became free. So I'm going to say a few more things about this non-abiding, this non-locality, this vast presence. I'm reading from Ajahn Amaro's book, and he's describing how when Ajahn Sumedho was setting up his monastery in England, Ajahn Sumedho, some of you may know both of these monks. Ajahn Sumedho had been really Ajahn Chah's Dharma heir, his primary disciple carrying on the tradition of the Thai forest practice into England, and Ajahn Amaro was brought it here into California. And Ajahn Chah was not particularly, he didn't do like much reading and writing. He taught from his own experience. And he insisted at some point to write a letter to Ajahn Sumedho, which was very unusual. And it was a very short letter, and he had one of the other monks in Thailand write it down for him. And what he wrote was, this was Ajahn Sumedho's instructions. The Buddha Dharma is not to be found in moving forwards, nor in moving backwards, nor in standing still. This, Sumedho, is your place of non-abiding. The Buddha Dharma is not found in moving forwards, nor in moving backwards, nor in standing still. This, Sumedho, is your place of non-abiding. A few weeks later, Ajahn Chah had a stroke and could no longer walk or speak or move. So in a way, this was his last teachings. And Ajahn Chah was very much, he was a Theravadan, obviously monk, in Southeast Asia, but he had the heart, even though he hadn't studied it, of a Zen master. And I'm going to read you a little bit more what how Amaro describes Ajahn Chah's teaching. I had the fortune of actually studying with Ajahn Chah before he died, before he had his stroke. At his monastery in Thailand, Ajahn Chah would sit on a wicker bench in the open area underneath his hut and receive visitors from 10 o'clock in the morning until late at night, every day, sometimes until 2 or 3 in the morning. Amongst the many ways he would like to convey the teachings, Ajahn Chah sometimes liked to tease or to test his visitors. He would put various conundrums out to them, queries or puzzles designed to frustrate, and then break through the limitations of the conditioned mind. He would ask us questions as, "Is this stick long or short? Where did you come from and where are you going?" Or as he said before, "If you can't go forward and you can't go back and you can't stand still, where do you go?" And when he put these questions, he'd have a look on his face like a cobra. Some of the more courageous responders would try a reasonable answer. "Go to the side." "Nope, you can't go to the side either. Up or down?" He would keep pushing people as they struggled to come up with a right answer. The more creative or clever they got, the more he would make them squirm. "No, no, that's not it." Ajahn Chah was trying to push his inquirers up against the limitations of the conditioned mind in hopes of opening up a space for the unconditioned to shine through. So I'm going to end here with something you may likely have heard before from T.S. Eliot. I first heard this in the 70s and have grown over the many years to appreciate what T.S. Eliot was saying, and to, I don't know that much about T.S. Eliot, but he has had to have had some mystical experience to be able to write this. At the still point of the turning world, neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards, at the still point where the dance is, but neither rest nor movement, and do not call it fixity, where past and future are gathered, neither movement from nor towards, neither ascent nor decline, except for the point, the still point, there would be no dance, and there is only the dance. Except for the point, the still point, there would be no dance, and there is only the dance. So, we'll stop there, and let's take a moment to rest in the here and now. And I'll ring the bell in a minute or so, and then there'll be time for any sharing.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.